Do you ever struggle with bad self-talk? Yeah. And if you go, no, I'm going to go, liar, right? You know, we all struggle with it, right? But there's an interesting challenge, right, that we all struggle with it, but we're also really good at covering it up, right? So that we get this narrative in our head that says terrible things to us, that we say things to ourselves in our head that we would never take from someone else, we would never accept from someone else. Yet somehow we allow that narrative to play over and over. And you might be saying, I don't allow it to do anything. It just does it. You know, and it comes from a lot of places. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not going to try and diagnose, you know, the source of that pain. But what I do know is that it's real. And it is something we struggle with. But also part of our kind of human existence is that we learn to cover it up. You know, some folks pretend to be happy. Some people just stay quiet so they don't have to interact with anybody. Some people kind of use a very blustery personality to hide how they're dealing with things. And what's interesting, though, is that as we do that, we may succeed in convincing other people that we don't have those issues, but that camouflage doesn't make us feel any better. You know, it may get us through our day, it may get us through what we're interacting with, it may get us through what we're facing in that moment. But sometimes even the success of our camouflage gives our negative self-narrative more ammunition to use against us. You're fake, you're a liar, you're a pretender. And then as you deal with that, and as you fight through that, and as you struggle with that, you look around and you see everybody else seems to be doing just fine. Yet you're struggling so deeply inside. Do you know why everyone else seems like they're doing just fine? Because they're really good at camouflage too. The way I've heard it put, which I think is so useful, is that we're busy comparing our insides to everyone else's outsides. That pain we feel inside, that when we look around, everyone else looks so good, is just because we don't see the pain that they're experiencing as well. Right? No one's life is perfect, no matter how much it seems like it might be. Right? And everyone struggles with deep hurts from many different sources, creating a great deal of pain. But as we look around and everyone else looks like they're doing okay, we start asking ourselves the question, what's wrong with me? Why isn't my life in order? Why don't I feel better? Why do I feel so alone? And so one thing I want you to hear from me today is that you are not alone. That as you battle that, you know, as the reason I kind of joke kind of in the beginning is because the absurdity of the fact that no one has a negative self-narrative. Right, some of us have more extreme ones than others. You know, some folks it only happens to sometimes. Some folks it happens to almost all the time. But everyone's wrestling with it. And so what I wanted to do was kind of kick off a new series today called Bring Your Baggage. And because I know in my mind, it looks a lot like that picture. Right, there's this big stack of baggage just tumbling all around. And it keeps falling down. They keep trying to put another one in there to hold it up. You know, or when I think I've got it cleaned out, another whole pile falls down on me. And so what I want to do throughout this series is, first of all, kind of face the reality that we all have struggles, right? That everyone is not fine. In fact, no one is fine. Some of us may be doing a little better than others, but no one is fine. And the reason I want to do this as we go through this is that unless we deal with the baggage that we're carrying, it so negatively impacts our lives, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing about life, right, is that kind of what you carry with you determines the quality of the journey, right? So unless you deal with your baggage, unless you can kind of lighten your baggage, unless you can kind of put some of that stuff down, it's just going to keep impacting your life. You know, I'm rapidly approaching 60 years old. Don't know how I got here. I don't know how this happened. But I'm getting there pretty quickly. You know, when I was younger, I'm like, well, by the time I'm 40, I'll be okay. And then it's like, okay, by the time I get to 50, I'll be okay, right? Well, 60's around in the corner, and I don't feel okay. You know, I mean, hopefully there's growth in there, and there's a bit of sense of peace that begins to develop as you work through things. But the reality is that I don't expect to be okay at 70 or 80, and if I make it to 90, I don't expect to be okay. But my hope is I'm a little more okay than I used to be. And I think that's the journey for each of us. is to be willing to do the work to kind of identify healthy practices that we can bring into our lives and begin to put some of that baggage down. Or maybe hand some of it over to Jesus to kind of carry, you know, kind of take it off for us, to relieve us of some of that. Now, the thing is, the reality is that you probably know you can't just pray this away, because I think many of us have tried to pray it away. Prayer is an important part of it, but there's work that we have to do as well. So to kind of get us started on this journey of this series, I want to actually look at a handout that Bonnie uses in her classroom sometimes. So it's very busy to be up on the screens, but this is a little kind of activity sheet. There's a coloring section in the middle, and there's a verse at the bottom. And this is the verse. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Now that's a psalm, right? So a psalm is a poem or a song sort of thing. And so this is someone, you know, praying to God or singing to God saying that I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And I've often looked at that as that person trying to convince themselves that that's true, that as they struggle with it, they're reminding themselves that that's the case. And what's interesting is that, you know, always important to remember that the Bible was not written in English, right? The Psalms were largely written in ancient Hebrew. And so there's always a little bit of a translation thing that goes on. So the Hebrew word that's translated as fearfully actually means something that's worthy of honor, respect, awe. And when something is wonderful, it's marvelous. Excuse me, it's marvelous, it's miraculous, it's beautiful. So I'm going to ask you a question. When you walked up to the mirror this morning, did you look in that mirror and your first thought was, oh man, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I'm worthy of all. That might be concerning if you actually said that one out loud, right? But you are beautiful and you are marvelous. And you're who you're supposed to be. But that is very hard to convince ourselves of a good deal of the time. In fact, the cause of that dark narrative that many of us deal with, particularly the one that kind of plays almost day after day sometimes, is struggling to believe that we're who we're supposed to be or where we're supposed to be. So one of the other things on this activity sheet that I like is that blue circle on the left, which again, I realize you can't see from there. But it's actually a little kind of exchange. And if we were a kid's classroom, we would go through this exchange. I'm not above any of that, by the way. And what it is that you start out with a question. Who made you wonderful? The response, God made me wonderful. Now, I'm not big on responsorials in church, but sometimes there's a place for it. So I'm going to ask you a question. Who made you wonderful? I'm not moving on. God made me wonderful. I'm not moving on until everyone does it. So who made you wonderful? One more time. Who made you wonderful? Do you believe that? Do that. And now here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Tomorrow morning when you walk in front of the mirror, say, who made you wonderful? God made me wonderful. Now, do I think that that little repetition is going to suddenly change your entire life? No. But it's a foundation. It's a foundation to start to shift our thinking, to start to see ourselves more the way that God sees us. Right? Because something that's important to remember is that that dark narrative that's playing in your mind, that's something that's built on lies. Right? There's this lies that play in your head to say that you are not valuable. That God did not create you with a purpose. That you're flawed, that you're broken, that there's something wrong. And every time that plays in your head, that's a lie playing in your head. And what is the cure for lies? Truth. And the truth is that God made you wonderful. You are not an accident. You know, and I'm sorry for the things that you have gone through. And I know everyone has gone through some ugly things. But God made you wonderful. And he has a plan for it. And he has a path and a purpose for it. So what I'd like to do this morning is take a look at some of the principles that we can apply to begin to kind of learn to silence that narrative, or at least start to get some control over that narrative. And throughout the series, we'll look at a variety of things like that. So to get us started this morning, I actually want to look at a narrative of a guy you probably heard of, but you you may not know the details of his story. A guy named Gideon. Now, if you've been in church for any length of time, you've heard of Gideon. But often, we don't really talk about what Gideon's life was like. Because Gideon was a guy who had a terrible, terrible self-narrative. And he lived in a very difficult time. And so his image of himself was pretty lowly. Part of that was from the circumstances that he grew up in. But part of it was just the narrative that played in his own mind. And I think what makes Gideon so relatable is that he goes through all of this, and he struggles through it just like we do. But he also lays out a path for us that shows us how we can kind of wrestle through to the other side as well. Now, Gideon takes place during the period of the judges. Now, we talked about that a little bit in our last series, because Ruth also lived during the period of the judges. But Gideon's narrative is actually documented in the Old Testament book called Judges. Now, the period of the judges was a very long period. It was several centuries long. It's kind of after the period of Joshua, so you have Moses, then Joshua, and then many years later, you would have King Saul and King David. Well, there's many centuries between those things, and that's the period of the judges. And do you remember what the kind of distinctive of the judges period was? Everyone did what was right in their own mind. That's always a great idea. Right? But the idea was it was loaded with disorder. There was no clear leader. There was no clear direction. There was kind of no clear kind of purpose as a whole. There are periods where God raises up specific leaders for short periods. Those are the people known as the judges. And Gideon ends up being one of those judges. So just as a reminder, right, this is the ancient world, right? So talking about more than 3,000 years ago, more than 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. And Gideon lives in a period where the surrounding, because his homeland, Israel, was so filled with disorder, they were constantly victims of a surrounding nation called Midian. And so what would happen is that the people in their homeland in Israel would actually start to try to raise up food, crops, livestock. And periodically, Midian would just rush in and just take everything, burn the crops, steal the livestock. And so by the time you get to Gideon being an adult, people are like living in caves and living on cliffs, just basically just trying to stay out of sight. And so as we meet Gideon, he's in this period where he's down in the bottom of a wine press. Now, that may sound fun to some of you, but it's important to understand what a wine press is in ancient Middle East. And a wine press is basically a hole, a pit. Because what they would do is that they would have a sloped piece of rock where you could crush the grapes, and then that would actually pour down into the hole, and you would gather it in a hole that you had carved out of the rock. So you use the rock like a bowl, like a huge bowl. So when we first meet Gideon, he's down in a hole, cowering down, threshing wheat. In other words, he's got a few stalks of wheat, beating it on the ground against a rock, trying to get enough food to get through the next day. That's when we meet Gideon. Basically, he is cowering in fear, just hoping to survive. And as we meet him, he gets this unexpected visitor. It says, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Gideon's in a hole with his head down, beating little sticks of wheat on the ground, trying to get enough food. Do you think he feels like a mighty warrior? Do you think he ever saw himself as a mighty warrior? And here's the thing I want you to hear, that Gideon didn't see himself that way, but God did. See, one of the challenges that we have in our lives is that our view of ourselves is highly circumstantial, right? When things are going well, when we're doing well, we're killing it at work, or we're killing it in our family, or we're just doing really well at whatever it is, we might start to feel a bit good about ourselves. But when our circumstances turn negative, we start to feel negative about ourselves. But God's view of you is not circumstantial. God's view of you is consistent. That God loves you as you. That God is not asking you to be someone else. God is not asking you to act like someone else. I mean, when we do things that harm ourselves or when we do things that harm other people, God wants us to move away from those behaviors, but it never impacts our love, his love for us. That our value to God is not tied to our achievements. His view of us is not tied to our achievements. That he loves us no matter what's going on. He may hurt for us. He may want us to change harmful behaviors, but his love for us never changes. And so no matter how we may see ourselves at any moment, God still sees us the same. But we see that as Gideon hears that, you know, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. He's kind of like, it appears as far as I can tell, he doesn't even hear the mighty warrior part. He just hears the Lord is with you. And he starts thinking about his circumstance. I'm hiding in a hole, trying to scratch out a living. Trying to scratch out life, basically, not even living, life. And everyone I know is doing the same sort of thing. And you're saying the Lord is with me? You've got to be kidding. He says, pardon me, my Lord, but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all God's wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian. In other words, given us into the hand of our attackers. That's what he hears. In other words, you know, if God is such a good God, why are bad things happening? If God is such a good God, why do I have the problems and pain in my life that I do? If God is with me, why am I sick? Why do people I love get sick? Why do I have these problems? Why is all this happening to me? And that's a completely valid question. Right? It's a question that we all wrestle with, that when things are so difficult, we're like, where is God? And according to the narrative of Gideon, God is with us even when things are hard. And I know that in my own experience, talking to people who don't believe in God, one of the number one reasons people give to me about that, if God is so good, why is there so much bad in the world? And Gideon has that question. Gideon's basically saying that, you know, hey, if God is with me, why isn't God doing something about it? And it said that when Gideon asked that, the Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hands. Am I not sending you? So when Gideon turns to God and says, why aren't you doing something about it? What does God say? I did. I created you. And I'm sending you. Right? That is not to say that what you're dealing with you can fix on your own. But in every circumstance, God is in it with us, and there is a path in it that leads to someplace meaningful. And it can be hard, and it can be challenging, and it can be hard to see. It can feel almost impossible to see sometimes. But there's a path, a valid path forward. And so what the angel is saying to Gideon is that I have given you abilities. I have given you an opportunity. I am asking you to step into that and do something about it. Now, if you think of the difficulties you're dealing with in your life, particularly something really challenging, when you pray to God for help, do you want him to tell you to fix it? No, we want him to fix it, right? That's what Gideon wants too, by the way. Because as the angel says to Gideon that, hey, I've made you, go deal with it. Gideon says, pardon me, my Lord. A little less bold now, by the way, right? Pardon me, my Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least of my family. So Manasseh was a small tribe. So in other words, my clan is the smallest clan in the smallest tribe. And in my clan, my family is this little family, and I'm just a little guy in this little family. I'm nobody from nowhere. What do you expect me to do? You know, and I'm not minimizing anyone's pain. I know a lot of you are dealing with some serious stuff. But what I do know is that God's in it. And that God has created you uniquely to deal with it. God is in it with you. And this is one of the hardest things to face sometimes. That the good that we bring in difficult circumstances may not save us. Sometimes the good that we bring helps other people. I've shared with you guys before, a gentleman that I walked very closely with during the last year of his life. And the last week before he died, actually, last 2 weeks before he died, but the last week he was bedridden, he couldn't do anything. But the week before that, he was still going into other patients getting treatment, encouraging them, because people were afraid of what was going to happen. He's like, you know, there's still more time ahead for you. There's still things you can do. Hey, I've had those same drugs. You know what? You're going to feel bad the next couple days, but the day after that, if you'll make yourself and get up, you can go on a little bit. And I couldn't do that. If I walked in and told those people that, rightfully, they would tell me, get out of here. I don't know what they're dealing with, because I don't. But he did. That's a tough thing, that sometimes the good that we bring is not for ourselves. Sometimes the good we bring is to be God's presence to someone else. And that's a challenging situation. Now, in the case of Gideon, he is being called to basically lead the defenses of his home nation. And he's basically saying, that's why I'm a nobody from nowhere. I don't know anything about this. But what we see happen, if you read the narrative of Gideon, it's only three chapters, 6, 7, and 8 of Judges, right? Chapters 6, 7, and 8 of Judges. If you read that full narrative, what you see happen in Gideon's life is this transformational relationship with God. Because when he first starts out, God is just this kind of distant idea, right? When he first has this encounter, when he's kind of down in the hole, he refers to God in terms of how other people have told him about God. But what we start seeing with Gideon is that he does something that is so important. Even though he has his doubts in the beginning, he keeps talking to God. We have a name for talking to God. What is it? Praying. Right? He keeps praying. He keeps interacting with God. That he shares his concerns with God. You know, and initially he's very distant. You know, pardon me, sorry. Right? But as time goes on, as he continues that relationship with God, Gideon's faith begins to grow. His faith in God begins to grow. God stops being a distant idea, and God becomes personal and real, and someone that he can be open with and honest with. And as he starts to realize the enormity of the path that he's being led down, he even argues with God. He wrestles it out with God. He's like, I don't think that can't be what you're asking me to do. But he stays in the conversation, and he keeps trying to figure out ways not to have to do it. But he never stops talking to God. He never leaves that prayer connection with God. And so as a result, Gideon's relationship with God changes. And I want to be clear, God doesn't change. God's relationship with Gideon never changed. But Gideon's relationship with God changed. It happens by that continued connection, that continued being in conversation with God, that continued staying in it. And as God leads Gideon kind of down this path, this what for him is an incredibly scary path, Gideon begins to believe that the path might be real. You know, and one of the things that we have to be careful of, when we read these biblical narratives, it's very easy to see people as kind of abstract ideas. Oh, Gideon heard from God, Gideon ran into battle, Gideon wins the battle. That's not what the narrative says. But you got to look for it, right? The narrative says that God kind of gives Gideon an idea of something he should do. And Gideon doesn't want to do it, so he kind of resists it. But that idea develops as he stays connected with God, and he takes the first step. Never quite clear where it's going to end up. But then he takes the next step, and he stays connected to God. And that's the path for us, right? That's the path, is that when God speaks into your life, when God points you down a path, the odds of you understanding the end of that path, super low. As someone once told me, if God told you his plans for you, you wouldn't believe him. And I can back that up. Trust me, I can back that up. And you might even turn and run. And so God feeds it to us a bit over time. But the key is that if you're going to do with your life what God calls you to do, you have to be bold. You have to be willing to be scared. You have to be willing to step into things that you're not sure you can do. You know, and we can be tempted to say, though, that's for young people. You know, when you're young, that's what you do. Are you breathing? Right? There's a plan for you. Right? Whether you're young or you're old, whether you're healthy, you're battling illness, God has a plan for you in all of this. And it comes down to being willing to step into that plan. And for Gideon, he finally stepped into it. And he takes us into this incredible journey with God. And so as God continues to lead Gideon, he finally accepts this call that you are to lead the defenses of this nation. So Gideon, quite nervous but willing to be bold, actually puts out a call and calls for the men of his clan to come together and actually join him in the battle. And to his surprise, thousands of men show up. And as you read the narrative, you're like, oh, this is it. This is how God works. He just, you know, if I just hang in there, he's going to bring all this support in. And then God says, well, that's too many people. That if you go in with all these people, you're going to say you did it. I want you to trust me in this. I want you to cut down your numbers. And so Gideon begins to go through a process of starting out with thousands of men in battle. And as he goes through the process, he gets down to just a few hundred. Now that seems kind of crazy, right? But what we find, if you stay in the narrative, the reason that God had him cut down the numbers is because Gideon was finding comfort in a very large group of people. People who did not share his goals, who did not share his intensity, his belief in what he was called to do. Because we learned very quickly that most of the men who showed up were never really planning to go into battle. They were afraid. And the first chance they had, they planned to run for it. And had he been in the battle with thousands of them and 95% of them run away in the middle of the battle, he's going to fail. He also discovers that there's another group of men who showed up who are oblivious. They just aren't paying any attention to anything. And if you're fighting next to a guy who's swinging a sword and not paying attention, that's not going to go well for you. So what we find is that Gideon found comfort in the large group, but his success was tied to being with the right group, even if it was smaller. Right? And that's a big part of our own lives, right? Is that there's this temptation to kind of say, well, that's the big group over there. They must know what they're doing. Now, most of us have lived long enough to know that's not true, but we're still tempted to do it. Right, that we're kind of saying that, well, if I see things differently than that big group over there, maybe I'm wrong. And of course, we should be open-minded, right? We should listen to one another. It's hard to imagine in, you know, the century we live in that we should actually talk to each other and could civilly disagree. It once was possible, apparently 3,000 years ago it was. But the issue here is that this temptation to kind of say, I'm going to kind of go with the largest group, can also be very undermining if it's the wrong group, right? Because if you go towards the large group, whatever large group means in your circumstance, that can feed our self-doubt. If we keep seeing things differently than the large group does, that large organization, that large whatever, we start to doubt ourselves more, that I must be the one that's wrong. And so we need to keep an open mind about that, because we are much better off being with other people who feel the call of God in our lives the same as we do, who support the same goals and directions that we do. Right? Again, we don't close off our minds, we don't stop listening to people, but if you're in connection with God and you're connected in prayer and you're with a group of people who feel very connected the same way, that's our direction, that's our path, that's how we actually fulfill God's call in our life. Not going with the big crowd that's the easiest one, but the one of the lines was where you feel God is calling you to go. And ultimately, that's what Gideon does. The Gideon joins together with this small group of people, and they actually follow God's leading, head down into, one night they head down into the camp of this huge army that's coming to attack them. And through a whole bunch of really odd circumstances, the invaders just run off and take off. And Gideon and his supporters send them away without ever swinging a sword, without ever shooting an arrow. Now, what's kind of funny is that as I kind of tell this narrative, You're like, well, that's pretty anticlimactic. That's kind of lame. I thought something good was going to happen. But something did. See, the thing is that we can be so action movie generated, action movie, actually, I say action movie motivated, that we think that the big fiery battle is the battle. The battle in real life is life transformation. That Gideon has been in the battle since the very beginning of this narrative. Right from that moment where he had this internal narrative that says, I'm just a nobody from nowhere. And he encounters God. And he hears from God. And he hears God's leading. And he doubts it. And he struggles through it. And he struggles to believe it. And he struggles to believe that the path that God is leading him on is the right one. Yet, he takes a step. And as he continues, and he struggles to believe, he continues to take another step. And he argues with God. And he doubts God. But then he takes another step. The battle for each of us rarely involves a big blow up and a big rush of, you know, fire and, you know, pyrotechnics in the sky. The battle for us is overcoming what's happening inside of us that prevents us from taking the steps that God's calling us to take. The realization that none of us are done. We all still have things to do. That God has a path for each and every one of us here. No matter what your age are. From Amelia, who's 7, to, I'm not going to guess anybody's age. You all know who you are and what you are. Right? Wherever you are, right? God has a plan and path for you. And he doesn't tell you the ending. He doesn't. He simply invites you to take the next step and trust him. And so what we see in the narrative of Gideon is this very kind of four kind of key principles, I think, that Gideon applies in his life that leads him to success without the pyrotechnics, but because he was willing to undertake the battle. That there are basically four principles that he applies. Right? There's prayer, purpose, path, and people. Right? Prayer. You got to stay connected with God. And I want to, when I say connected with God, there's nothing wrong with memorized prayers, right? There's nothing wrong with reciting things off the back of cards. But can you imagine my relationship with my wife if I only read her greeting cards all day long? You could. It'd be easy. It wouldn't be one, right? You know? Because she wants to talk to, I think she wants to talk to me, right? But, you know, in a real relationship, right, you talk to each other. And what I want to encourage you with is to talk to God for real. To lay your heart out bare for God. When you're mad, tell him you're mad. When he's disappointed, you tell him you're disappointed. But also praise him when things go well. Wrestle it out for real. Because that's what we see Gideon do. He doesn't just say, oh, you're God, I'll do whatever you say. He says, I don't think so, God. But he still takes a step. So foster that real connection with God. Purpose. Trust that you have one. I can't. It always disappoints me when I meet older people who say, my time is behind me. Lies. That's a lie in your mind that tells you your time is behind you. There's still so much to do. Think of all the things that you've accumulated in your mind since the beginning. Right? All the things you've been through. All the experiences you've had. Think of all those things that used to freak you out and you're like, I can handle that. Because you know what? There's someone else who can't. And maybe just sharing your story of how you came to believe that can make a difference. None of us are done, remember where you are. So trust that you have a purpose no matter what point of your life you're in. The path. Start the journey. Take whatever step you can take. Do whatever you can do. Take whatever step is next. And then stay with it. Because as you trust that you have a purpose, and as you're talking to God, when you take that next step, no matter how small it is, the step after that will reveal itself. So trust that you have a path and then a purpose and stay on the path. And then people, right? Don't try to go it alone, right? To surround yourself with people who will actually encourage you in your journey. Odds are it's not the big crowd, right? You want to connect with people who believe, you know, in the same path that you do. In some cases, you might be the leader and they're more of a supporter. In some cases, they might be the leader and you're more of a supporter. But when we come together around a common cause and a common purpose, in connection with God, following the path that God has for us, that's when we start to see God do amazing things, not just in our lives, but through our lives. That we begin to shape the lives of others, to serve others, to lift others up, to bring transformation in the lives of others, which further transforms our own life. My friends, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. Trust that, believe it, and don't waste it. But step into it and do the work that God leads you into.